Our next talk is from Terry Gray on CO2 music. So let's welcome Terry.
Thank you. Just going to jump right in. Here's a slide that shows over the past 10,000 years the carbon dioxide concentration in the Earth's atmosphere. And you can see there 250, maybe getting close to 300,000 parts per million. And, you know, that reflects that there is carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, but that doesn't change. You know, we've got the plants and animals that produce carbon dioxide as part of their life process, and then plants that take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. We got oceans that have more or less a balanced bringing in of CO2 and the emission of CO2, and forest removal and forest growth. We've done a lot in terms of human influenced forest work, but you know, this happens in nature without us, and you know, we more or less have this balance in carbon dioxide. Now, those of you who know this data know where I'm heading here. I didn't show you the far right edge of this graph. This is the same graph that I showed you before. And you see that here in the last few hundred years, we've gone from 250, 260 parts per million of CO2 to, well over 400, 425, 430 was the peak this year. And that's all happened, you can see there from the dates, in the last 50 years or so. What we note from that, and because we're seeing that large increase in carbon dioxide concentrations, that reflects this far right part of this curve where there's an imbalance, right? We've got things mostly due to human efforts in burning things and cement that produce CO2 emissions, and nothing that counters that. Okay, and so we're getting this increase in carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere. And, you know, here's another graph that shows this. This is the Keeling curve showing data from 1958 or so. And we're just seeing a gradual increase in the concentrations. When he started this work, we were at 310 or 312 parts per million. We're now up to 430 parts per million. Okay, those of you who know this data know that this is in fact the case. Here's another graph that shows the same kind of data. I'll comment in a minute that here we're not talking about parts per million anymore, but the raw amount, billions of tons of CO2. But this is showing the data since 1850 to present. You see this dramatic rise due to coal combustion, oil combustion, gas combustion, a little bit due to cement, tiny bit due to flaring, and then some other industry. And this, you know, we're at these numbers here are at 37.79 billion tons of carbon dioxide being emitted in the atmosphere, and some of that is not getting removed at all. just a comment. I'm not going to go into detail on this slide, but if anybody wants to focus on this, you know, sometimes we're talking about parts per million in the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and we're at, you know, the 400s parts per million. We've been increasing that as the chart on the right shows, about 2 to 3 every year. But we will often will be talking in terms of actual mass of CO2 in the atmosphere. And if you're interested in the technical details, you can read through this slide. But we are emitting 37.75 gigatons of carbon dioxide every year. That's what was in this previous graph here. The units were in gigatons of CSU. And turns out that about half of that gets put into the atmosphere, a quarter of it gets put into the ocean, and a quarter of it gets put into plants. So basically, we are adding to the atmosphere about half of that amount of emitted CO2 into the atmosphere, and that's what was what we're seeing is the increased concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere as things as we continue this process. What are the solutions to this problem? Not going to go into the details of why this is a problem, but CO2 is a absorbs infrared light, causes the temperatures of the atmosphere to go up, and you know, we see this as a problem. And I think we could probably guess that it's a problem. The fact that, you know, over the millennia, we've got a balance of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, some produced and some removed. And we're now adding more to the atmosphere every year without removing any. Okay. And so two solutions. Develop our energy needs without CO2, without burning things, okay? And that's where renewables and nuclear come in. What I'm going to talk about today does not develop those ideas, but I'm not saying there's anything problematic about those. But there are problems with that. The pace of development, I'll show you this slide in just a second. We're not making enough renewable energy to solve this problem. We're not developing nuclear energy solutions in a way to solve this problem. There are, other than pace of development, there's land requirements. And while, you know, there seems to be plenty of space out there to develop, you know, solar farms and wind farms and whatnot, we're getting interesting pushback from people who don't want these things taking up space in their neighborhoods. And then, of course, the sun doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine all the time. The wind doesn't blow all the time. And so we have to have some kind of storage of these energies. Nuclear doesn't have this problem, but the renewables do. You know, battery technology, which, again, continues to be developed. And I'm not going to critique it all that much other than it doesn't appear to be a good solution. The other solution is to learn how to remove the carbon dioxide that is being produced by burning things. And so that our, you know, if we go back to go back to this slide here, we have something that we can put into that oval there. Okay, and so the CO2 that we emit, we somehow can take out of the atmosphere. And I want to talk a little bit about that. This slide here is just emphasizing, this is a familiar slide to those of you who know this area, but, you know, emphasizes, notice the solar, hydro, wind, and geothermal. Those are all there as alternative energy solutions, but they're tiny in their amounts. This is U.S. Data. The natural gas, coal, and petroleum solutions are by far the largest contribution. Nuclear comes after that. But these renewables that, you know, many people are advocating as the solution are small numbers. Okay, so I want to talk about and give you just some ideas about removing CO2 from the atmosphere. In principle, and we'll see this at the end, you can continue to burn it, produce CO2 into the atmosphere, but if you've no ways to remove it, then that becomes a closed circle as well, just like you know, plant and animal relationship or the ocean absorbing or emitting CO2 and so on. And so, you know, three categories here: carbon capture, utilization, and storage. You'll see me refer to those as CCS, carbon capture and storage, or CCUS, using all four words there. We can capture and store waste CO2. That's one solution. I'll talk about something that proposal and some techniques for doing that. And then I think the optimal solution is to capture the CO2 and convert it back into fuel and close that loop. Okay. So, you know, approaches to carbon capture for dilute concentrations of CO2, the kind of CO2, even, you know, even though we are worried about it, it's really dilute at 430 parts per million, you know, compared to, you know, nitrogen at, you know, 78 parts per hundred, and oxygen at 21 parts per hundred. But it's very dilute, but we can use techniques, and they're described, the chemistry is described in this slide a little bit. I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but, you know, we can suck the carbon dioxide, suck air into these fan systems, and with some chemistry that's, you know, described there using calcium hydroxide, magnesium hydroxide, or these amines, we can capture that carbon dioxide and then do that process reversibly and have the CO2 collected and taken out of the atmosphere. And then we have to do something with it. And, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. We can do the same kind of technique at the smokestack where we burn things. Okay. And it's a little easier to do because CO2 is more concentrated. You know, we're talking about, you know, 5 to 10% carbon dioxide at these places where we burn things and in our cars. But we can get higher yields, and it's easier to do the chemistry. One technique, I'm not going to go into details here, but just to mention this company, NET Power Incorporated, where they separate nitrogen from oxygen in the air. before combustion, and the oxygen mixed with the combustion, you know, in the combustion reaction, produces basically water and carbon dioxide, easy to separate those. And so you do kind of your purification before the process. Okay, so what do we do with carbon, with captured carbon dioxide? Okay, there's, you know, calling it carbon capture and sequestration. Right now, we're doing some of this to actually pump into empty gas and oil wells. And this is useful for the oil industry because it helps push out sort of remaining oil and gas with this high pressure. But it's a way, it's a place to store carbon dioxide once we have separated it out from the previous techniques. And if we look at all of the, you know, the holes in the ground, the wells in the ground, the available space, we could put 75 years worth of carbon dioxide emissions in the ground and get it out of our atmosphere and out of the problems that CO2 is causing. Another technique is to convert to carbonate. And you know, here's this paper from this GAD Dakota lab where I've got some details in the slides. I don't think I have time to go into all of the detail, but basically you capture the carbon dioxide with carbonate, with carbon calcium hydroxide, and do some chemistry to convert that to calcium carbonate, which is an insoluble precipitate, which then you can put on the ground, bury in a hole. It's actually much easier to deal with than pure carbon dioxide gas that you might be dumping into the ground. This is, turning reactive crystallization pathways for integrated carbon capture. Here's some of the chemistry of that. We take this, these gases and react them with carbon dioxide and make carbonates and store it that way. All right, this is a detailed slide. I really don't have time to go into all of the details here, but this is the way this lab is doing that taking these minerals doing some electrochemistry. But the end result is, you can see here, the magnesium hydroxide, calcium hydroxides, which can then be reacted with carbon dioxide and produced carbonates, which then can be disposed of large volumes. Now, this slide again has a lot more details, but 18.5 billion tons, that's how much we're generating each year. If we turn that into carbonates, what does that look like? Well, the most nasty look at this is that we make a 5-centimeter pile. This half of the area of Wyoming, and we can put it in that space and dump it out. We could also put it in the Sahara Desert, which is a lot more space. We can also put it in the ocean or in lakes, and we have many, many, many years of having this kind of space available. Okay, so I'm going to just jump ahead to this last discussion. One thing we can do is convert the carbon dioxide to fuel, and that will allow us to sort of circularize that. Here's a slide from one of my chemistry classes where using this Fischer Tropsch process, we can take carbon dioxide, we can get carbon dioxide in the form that we want it, combine it with hydrogen that we can generate from water, and turn this back into a fuel. Okay, that's what this amount is right here. Okay, so let's see. Yep, one more slide. And it's interesting that a company that just started promoting its work this year, Aircella, it has developed this refrigerator-sized device, which does that those very reactions and takes carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and generates about a gallon of gasoline per day. And if you've got this sort of fueled by solar energy sources, you're actually now circularizing that those series of reactions, and that's what's here, right? This is if we do carbon capture and utilization, we can balance this imbalance that's from our burning things by capturing and utilizing that carbon dioxide and get back to a place where we're not adding CO2 to the atmosphere, and we could actually remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and get back to whatever we decide is the best atmospheric concentration of CO2, which is probably that 250 to 300 range that we've seen for the past thousands of years. Thank you.
All right, we have a few minutes for questions for Terry. I don't know who raised their head first.
Oh, yeah. So I work in the fire suppression industry. We, of course, use a lot of CO2, and we dump a lot of CO2 directly into that. Later this year, we'll dump a 3,000-pound system, just because that's part of the ongoing maintenance of the fire suppression system. And every portable fire extinguisher that you see, the CO2 extinguisher, we dump it every few years. And I'm wondering, in our industry, there's been no talk or no effort to contain that. I don't know how significant our contribution is to this, and that would be a very easy place to collect CO2, because it's pure CO2.
Right.
That is like a ton and a half dump, like we're going to do later this year. Is that significant in your mind?
It's
significant. Is it worth it? Should our industry be looking for ways to capture the CO2 we dump?
I think that, you could ask the question, what's worse, emitting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere or having these fires. I think that the carbon dioxide removal and having this balance takes care of that problem as well. Anything that is emitting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we can remove it.
System that was converting it to gasoline, we could fuel that with pure CO2. That'd be a better process. Rather than collecting it from the atmosphere to make the gasoline.
I'm indifferent about those details.
One more quick question.
Yeah, I was curious, Terry, on your machine that makes gasoline. Where does the hydrogen come from?
So, again, currently, a lot of the hydrogen that we use in the world comes from methane, right, which is just another form of burning a hydrocarbon. But you can make hydrogen from water. Okay, of course, you have to put energy in to do that. And of course, this process requires energy, because you're doing the reverse of the process that generates energy. If we want to have a renewable, environmentally sensitive process, we would generate this hydrogen gas from water.
Okay. Let's thank our speaker.